gladly give this to you as a download if you put your email address and put your phone number in case I can't read your email address. If you want it in the King James Version, I call it Everlasting Life Illustrated because I work with LDS people and they use the King James Bible. And this has, the King James Version has all of them in it except for the next to the last one, which is about the Mormon Manti pageant. So that can just get passed around and use it freely. So we are looking at encouragement from Hagar and from Ishmael because there are two chapters in the Bible about her, Genesis 16 and Genesis 21. In both chapters, where is she? In the wilderness, in the desert, in a lonely, deserted place. And in both of those chapters, God meets her there. And we have desert experiences, don't we? We are in the wilderness. God can meet us there, and we can learn from him. So what might be the purposes of why God has Hagar in the book of Genesis? I don't believe it's to warn us against impatience, which we've all been taught. But in Genesis 15:5, God had said to Abraham, "You will have a son from your own body." Now, of course, it was assumed that Sarah would be the mother, but it was not stated until chapter 17 that Sarah would be the mother. So keep that in mind. And by the time Abraham was 85, that promise of a son from his own body had not yet happened. And so they got this idea of using Hagar. The Grace New Testament commentary even says, "Customs in Abraham's day allowed him to do precisely as he did to raise up an heir. When he accepted Sarah's request to have a son by her maidservant, Abram was not doing anything illegal. Yet he was doing something that demonstrated he did not understand or believe that the promised seed would come through his union with Sarah." So I'm saying that maybe it was ignorance more than impatience. Sarah was too old to have children. And verse 3 of chapter 16 actually says Sarah gave Abraham Hagar as a wife. So it was not immoral. And 13 years, it wasn't until Ishmael was 13 years old that God came to Abraham again and said, "It's going to be Sarah. The son of promise, the son of the covenant, will come through Sarah." So for 13 years, they thought Ishmael was the promised son that God had told them would come from Abraham's own body. And furthermore, I don't think it's to show the origin of the Arab-Israeli conflict, which is recent, not until the 20th century, when the Jewish people started returning to the land in the early 1900s, and then in 1948, when Israel became a state, and all of a sudden, the Arabs got upset and started attacking because they realized Israel was a threat to them. That's really when the Arab-Israeli conflict began. It's not in the Bible. There is nothing negative in Scripture about Ishmael or the Ishmaelites, except that he made fun of Isaac when Isaac was, you know, little kid. And that's the only thing. And I think that we will see that in Genesis 16, where God, the angel of the Lord, tells her about Ishmael and his future, that those things are promises, not warnings, and they're not negative. And I hope I can convince you of that. So why is Hagar in the Bible? Well, first of all, I think it illustrates God's sovereign control. And this is just one verse of hundreds I could have used. But I used to think, especially since the 2020 election, and you might have different feeling about it, but after that election, I said to God, "You answered everything I prayed for. No, except for thy will be done." I have to assume God's will is being done. And I used to think that, you know, we're in the middle of a great satanic conflict, and God's going to win in the end, and meantime, Satan's going to get in a lot of blows, and that's just the way it is from Genesis 3 to Revelation 19. But I've changed my thinking, and I think we are in the midst of God's sovereign control of everything, the universe, the world, and he, with his right hand, this is Martin Luther's conflict, with the concept, with his right hand, he blesses his people and uses them. And with his left hand, he uses even the ungodly acts of godless people to accomplish his will, even his will for his blessed people. And so he has to sometimes, you know, he punishes Israel, takes them out of the land. Babylon punishes. But in Babylon, Babylon gets proselytized. Gentiles become believers through Israel. So all the nations are blessed through Israel. Well, God has to move them out into all the nations. And God uses a wicked nation to do that. Plus, they get cured of idolatry, don't they? And so we need to see that God is moving all the chess pieces around. And I think Hagar is one of those purposeful chess pieces. Other purposes, yes, God overcomes threats to the covenant. In chapter 21, he gets rid of Ishmael so that Isaac is not threatened. And Galatians 4 uses it as an illustration between the flesh and the spirit, between law and grace. But the one I want to focus on is the fourth one. It encourages us during our wilderness struggles. In every wilderness, we learn to depend on God's promises, and Hagar gets promises. We learn more about God's person, as Hagar did, and we wait for and look for how God will provide. And he did that for Hagar, too. Now, I'd like to tell you a story. A long time ago, there was a young black girl, and she was captured and sold into slavery. She was taken on a trip out of her country. The trip took 2 or 3 weeks, and she ended up in a rural situation, and she had been from a city. She was dark-skinned. They were white-skinned, her new owners, and they spoke a different language. They had different customs. They had different religion, but here she was. She now belonged to a wealthy couple. And she wasn't a field hand, which was good. She became the household slave. So she had to do the household chores and take care of the master's wife and so on. And so she adapted. And she learned the language. And she learned how to do things their way. And she even adopted their religion and started believing in their God. But this couple got older and had no children. And one day they decided that they could make her a surrogate mother and have a child through her. And so the master used her, and she became pregnant with his child. And as her pregnancy progressed, she started to realize her special status, and she thought, why am I doing the housework? My back hurts. And one day she told her master's wife, I'm not going to cook today because that smell of that food makes me nauseated. You don't know what it's like to be pregnant. I'm just going to sit today and take care of the baby. And so she got rebellious like that. Well, that did not sit well with the master's wife. And she told her husband, and he said, well, she's your slave. Do whatever you want to with her. And so the wife had her whipped. Well, that just made her more rebellious and more resentful. And as the baby grew in her and was moving around, she also realized that that baby would never be hers. It would not belong to her. The bigger she got, the more she wanted that baby. And she realized they could get rid of her and keep the baby. And she decided she would run away. And one day she stole some money, and she took off. And she went to the bus station, and she asked for a ticket to the farthest away city. And she took that bus, and in that city, she asked for a ticket to the next farthest away city. And when she got to that place, there were no more buses out. And she couldn't really read, so she didn't know what the schedule said, but she sat on a bus bench all night. And the next morning, she didn't know what to do. She didn't know where she should go. Is there any way she could get back to her homeland? And she wasn't sure where that was and who could she talk to. And she's on that bench all day long. Well, there was a free black man in the bus station, and he came over and sat down beside her. And after a while, he said to her, hey, where are you from and where are you going? And she looked into his eyes and they looked kind, and she decided to tell him the truth. And she said, my master did this to me and I'm running away. And he said, I think I can help you. I'll tell you exactly what you need to do. And that's where we find Hagar in Genesis chapter 16. If you want to turn there, and we'll see what the angel of the Lord said to Hagar in that lonely wilderness place. And first of all, he said, I'll tell you exactly what you need to do. When we're in the wilderness, we need to listen to God, don't we? Instead, we cry for the thorns removal, but the angel said this, go back and submit to your mistress. What kind of solution is that? That's the last thing we want to do. And that word submit is the same root word as in verse 6 where it says Sarah dealt harshly with her. Sarah afflicted her. It's the same word as in verse 11 where the angel says, the Lord has heard of your affliction, your misery. He's saying, go back and afflict yourself under Sarah. That's what he's telling her to do. But then he motivates her to do it. And he motivates her with promises for her son. So in verse 10, he says, your son will have many descendants so that they'll be too numerous to count. Actually, that was the promise that had been given to Abraham. And here God gives it to Hagar. Verse 11, you will have a son and name him Ishmael, which means God hears. Every time she called Ishmael, come here, she could be reminded, God heard me in the wilderness and God hears me now anytime I want to tell him something. Verse 12, he will be a wild donkey of a man. And this is a wonderful promise for Hagar because donkeys were the Dodge Ram trucks of that day. Very useful, very beneficial. And what he was saying, that he would be wild, what does that mean? He would never be a slave like she was. He would be free and independent. That was music to her ears. Then he said, his hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. In other words, when he has a conflict, he'll hold his own. He will be strong, not weak. Hagar had a conflict and she couldn't do anything about it. She felt like she had to run away. Ishmael would be able to stand his ground and do what he wanted. And then he said, he will, NIV says, live in hostility toward all his brethren. Well, that word hostility, I guess it can be translated that way, but it can also mean he will live in the presence of his brethren. He will live in the face of his brethren. And it is the same word in Genesis 4:14 that we've heard about Cain when he says, you're going to drive me from your face. From your presence. It is a geographical term. Cain wasn't saying, you're going to drive me from your hostility. He was talking about the face of God, the presence of God. I think this is a promise that he would dwell with his brethren because over in chapter 25, when he dies, in 25 verse 18, uh, it says, he hasn't died yet. These are the sons of Ishmael. The sons, they lived in the face of all their brothers. Yes, we could say that means they lived in hostility to all their brothers. But look in verse 9 of that chapter 25. Abraham dies, and who buries him? Isaac and Ishmael. And they're together burying him. I think they're doing it cooperatively. And we'll see it again in another verse. So she has these wonderful promises that enable her to go back and submit. Ishmael will not be a slave. He will not be a weak. He will not live in exile like she has done. He will have a home. And I get these ideas. These aren't my own ideas. These are from a book written by Tony Maloof, who is a Dallas Seminary grad and also an Arab man. And he wrote about it in his book, Arabs in the Shadow of Israel. So God told Abraham, I will multiply Ishmael's descendants exceedingly, so they shall not be counted for multitude. Ishmael gets that same blessing that Isaac gets. And then when Abraham said, oh, that Ishmael might live in your presence, he wasn't saying, oh, that Ishmael might live in hostility. It was the same word that the angel had used. Oh, that Ishmael might live in your presence. And God said, as for Ishmael, behold, I have blessed him, and I'll multiply him. He'll beget 12 princes. But my covenant, he's not the covenant son, is what God is saying to Abram in chapter 17. So they're not just my own ideas. And in our bewildernesses, we can depend on God's promises. Look them up. Find what's special to you and depend on them. And best of all, God not only gives promises, he gives himself. And that is also what Hagar learned. She learned about God's person, who he is. She learned that he is the God who hears. And then in back to chapter 16, verse 13, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, you are the God who sees me. She called him La Roi, the God who sees. Do you know that nobody else in the whole Bible ever gave God a new name? Hagar, not an Israelite, not a man, not the right ethnic group, just the little obscure person. She gets to give God a new name. And so, that's that slide. The God who hears and the God who sees. And there are several, I'm looking at the wrong place, all right? There are several firsts in this story in Genesis. It's the first time the angel of the Lord has shown up. Yes, he has appeared. He was a flaming torch to Abraham, and he has spoken to the other people. But this is the first appearance of the angel of the Lord, the pre-incarnate Christ is what we believe. And like I said, it's the first time somebody gets to give a new name to God. Now, fast forward to chapter 21, and this is 17 years later, because Ishmael was 13 when Isaac was born. He was, well, when Sarah got pregnant, he was 14. When Isaac was born, he was probably 17 when Isaac was weaned. And this is the chapter where Ishmael gets cast out. And it says that Abraham gave her a jug of water and a loaf of bread and sent her off. Well, chapter 25, verses 5 and 6, I'll just read this to you. It says, Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines, that's plural, and he had Keturah after Sarah died, and he had Hagar. He gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. So I don't think she just had a jug of water. Abraham loved this son. When God said, go ahead and cast him out, it said Abraham was sad about that. He was displeased. He was grieved over his son. But he did it. And the important thing is that I think he gave her provisions. I think she probably had animals and donkeys and people, servants, money, whatever she needed. But they got to a certain place and they couldn't find water. And they ran out of the water they had with them. And when you don't have water in the desert, you don't go anywhere. The animals couldn't drink. The people couldn't drink. They just had to, they were desperate. They couldn't go any farther. And so she put Ishmael under the little bit of shade she could find, and she went off so she wouldn't hear him crying. And is there a lesson there for prodigal children? Sometimes we parents need to distance ourselves and let the child hit bottom and cry out to God. And notice in chapter 21 who it is who cries out to God. On verse 17, God heard the boy crying, and the angel of the Lord called to Hagar from heaven and said, what is the matter? And so it was Ishmael who God heard and answered. And so we need to let our prodigals cry out to God for themselves and maybe stop telling them what they need to do. I don't know. And then he also reminds her of the promises in verse 17. He says, lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. She had kind of forgotten that. And sometimes, you know, he can't become the father of 12 nations if he dies. And we do that too. We get desperate and we forget God's promises. And then in verse 19, God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. She had called him the God who sees, and this God who sees opened her eyes to see a well, and so God gave her provisions, their own well. And then it says that they dwelled there. He learned to be an archer. He got a wife. He had a home. And so God provided for her. But there's another first in this chapter, and this might surprise you, and it's in verse 20. It says, God was with the lad. The first person in Genesis that is told God was with him is Ishmael. Two verses later, Abimelech says it about Abraham. And after that, we have it said to Isaac twice in chapter 26. God says it to Jacob in chapter 28 and 31. Jacob says it to his wives. He says it to his family. And he says it to three other occasions. He tells it. And then we all know about chapter 39, where it says four times, God, the Lord was with Joseph, twice at the beginning of the chapter when he's sold as a slave, twice at the end when he's in prison, and that just bookmarks the whole chapter. God is with Joseph. And now I want to speculate just a little bit about Joseph getting carried away to Egypt. Who was it who took him down to Egypt?
The Ishmaelites.
Yes, a caravan of Ishmaelite traders. And so here they are on this 2 or 3 week trip, and they speak the same language because the Arabic language was not made until several hundred years later, even though they claim it's a mother of all languages. But I think they were both speaking Hebrew at this time. They're speaking whatever Abraham spoke. And they probably, as they're talking, made a connection that you're related to Abraham? Well, so are we. He's our great-great-grandpa. And Joseph could say, really? Well, he's my great-grandpa too. And I come from a large family. There's 12 of us, and the Ishmaelites could say, yeah, we're one of 12 tribes. And they started making these comparisons. Maybe they said, how old are you? And Joseph said, I'm 17. And one of them said, 17? That's how old our great-grandpa was when he got kicked out of his home. And here you are getting kicked out of your home. And he wandered in the wilderness, and you were wandering in that field, and God gave him a well. And Joseph said, well, I was put in a well.
Wow.
And then maybe they said to him, well, God told our ancestor Ishmael that he was with him. And maybe that made an impression on Joseph. And of course, Joseph knew God was with his ancestors too. But in Egypt, Joseph had to remember that God was with him. It might have had an effect. And the reason I say that is because why are we told Joseph's age, 17? There doesn't seem to be any other reason. But when you see that 17, you make the connection to Ishmael of being 17 years of old, or at least I did. So in our wilderness struggles, we have God's solution, accept his assignment. It's new, we're not going to like it, but we're in his sovereign plan, and so we can count it all joy and submit to it and submit to him. And we have God's promises. Best of all, he hears us. Talk to him anytime about anything. He sees us. He sees everything we're going through. And we learn God in new ways. We learn that his grace is sufficient. We learn that he can give us his strength for our weakness. So we have God's provisions in that way. And best of all, he will never leave us or forsake us. We always have his presence. And they said that if you had questions, you were supposed to write them out, but I think we have some time if you want to ask some questions. All right? Thank you. Or make a comment. Make some comments. Yep, that's what I think. I think we can learn from Hagar. And somebody else is doing a seminar here about dysfunctional families in Genesis. And yes, it certainly was a dysfunctional family. And somebody else is doing one on dangers to avoid. So I hope that I'm not going to get contradicted. Don't run ahead of God or whatever. But that does encourage me that I watch the news. So many of my Christian friends says, I can't stand it. It's too depressing. I don't listen to the news anymore. And I said, that's your best prayer time. You hear the news and you say, dear Father, did you hear what they just said? Please don't let that happen. And Erwin Lutzer has evaluated the times we're in, and he wrote a book, We Will Not Be Silenced. And he says, pray, 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 and share the gospel. That's our job. And run for office if you want to. Okay, any comments?
It was beautiful reframing. I've never heard the perspectives that you've offered. This is great.
Right, thank you. Yep, God hears and God sees. Mm-hmm. And she says God never wastes your suffering. I just came across three of her talks on YouTube, and it's called Suffering is Not for Nothing. Two negatives. Oh, okay. Great. And it's a 3-hour session of her speaking. And you know, she's not dynamic, but she is so wise. And encouraging. All right. Well, thank you very much.